Welcome to Mumfessions, the award-winning podcast that helps you navigate motherhood. I'm Laura Guckian, maternal mental health advocate, motherhood coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. I'm on a mission to change how we talk about and support maternal mental health. This isn't just another motherhood podcast, because you are my guests. Each week, I'll be sharing your mumfessions, the honest, raw, messy truths mums are often too afraid to say out loud. I'll unpack the guilt, the overwhelm, the rage, and the reality. And I'll give you practical tools to help you move into your happier chapter of motherhood. And this season, I've invited some special guests to help answer your mumfessions, because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Before we begin, can I ask you to do me a massive favor? Please hit the follow or subscribe button. This will help more mothers to find Mumfessions. Coming up this week.
Because I've not told anyone this story. I've not said it on the radio or anything.
Okay.
Because I genuinely feel bad about it. Being a parent isn't respected enough and it's like torture.
It is torture. It's really, really hard. Like I felt that they would be better off without me. And a massive thank you to my expert midwife for supporting this episode of Mumfessions. I am so excited to welcome our next guest to Mumfessions. I'm going to explain as we get into this why I invited her on, because just before we hit record here, I said I saw her doing something and I needed her here. But before we get into that, I am just going to welcome her as a relatively new mum.
Yeah.
You might recognize her from TV, radio, and I'm going to try and say this correctly. You are so welcome to Mumfessions, Shan Welby.
Oh, beautifully, beautifully said. Every Shan will accept any pronunciation. We are not fussy about it. We've got no ego about it. If you're a Shan, you've been called everything. Sean, Shane, Sean. I once even got called John.
John is a stretch.
But you imagine that in American accent. So I went Shan and they went in a coffee shop, John.
Yeah, great fun in America. I was lucky when I was traveling in America as a student. My name is Laura. It's not an Irish name, but everyone else with the Irish name, they just adopted a new one because they just, God bless them, could not cope with the Sineads and the Quivas and all of those Irish names.
Yeah, Aoife, Siobhan's.
Aoife, yeah, Aoife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I do struggle with some Irish names myself. They are quite tricky, but there, I pulled that off. You are so welcome. And you are here today to share your mumfession with us and then help us answer an audience mumfession. But before we get into this, I want to share why I invited you on, because you don't know me and this literally was confirmed a couple of hours ago. But I think it was definitely last summer. And I was at home and This Morning was on and I saw a beautiful young woman there and they were talking about how someone had just returned from maternity leave. And I'm like, oh, well done her. She's back at work. And then it cut to a shot of your partner holding a teeny tiny baby. And I thought, oh, my God. She's a very new mum. How is she out of the house, dressed, looking beautiful? And there's words coming out of her mouth on live TV. And from that moment on, I was like, I need to speak to her because she has some sort of magic powers. And I just had so much respect from you because we all know how hard those first few weeks were. And there you were on This Morning presenting the show with your tiny baby in the corner. So that is how I came to know you. And I've been following you ever since. And I just love how you talk about motherhood so honestly. So you are very welcome to Mumfessions.
Thank you. I was saying, like, I'm so new to the sort of the mum sphere that I'm just getting into all the mum podcasts and everything. And obviously they're a lifesaver because you do feel quite alone. But thank you for that, because it was a surreal time. And a bit like any mum that's had to go back to work, I think adrenaline kicks in and you just hope and pray words can come out. You can do the thing you used to do. I didn't know if I could, though.
But you absolutely did. And I watched the whole show and I'm like, she's absolutely doing this on live TV. Like, you were absolutely amazing. Like, how did it feel in that moment? Were you like, what's happening? Because I know when I first went back to work, I was like, how do I switch on the laptop? Am I actually going to be able to hold a conversation with an adult here? And you were absolutely playing a blinder.
Oh, thanks. I mean, it was all those same feelings. It was like, do I have any chat? You know, because you have to think at like 100 miles an hour in live telly and live radio. And I kept thinking, will I have anything to talk about? Because I've done sort of nothing. For three months I took off, basically, I did switch off and zone out and had the most amazing time, actually. Because even though it is tough, and I'm not trying to play that bit down, it is tough. But it was my only focus. I didn't have to commute to the baby. I didn't have to do 10 other jobs around. All I had to do was look after Ruby. And so I found a bit of like joy in that because it was just my one, in a way, a job, but it obviously was a lot more personal.
Yeah.
And then going back to work, I think it weirdly was harder actually that my partner was there with the baby because it was almost distracting. And I thought, oh, I'm now merging the worlds and it's too weird because I can't do both in this minute.
Yeah.
And so almost the moment he took her downstairs and I could just crack on with work.
You're like, I'm back.
Yeah.
Got this.
Yeah. It was the weirdest part was when everyone was on set and I thought, this is just too weird.
Yeah, I can imagine. But before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about who you were pre-motherhood? Like what you do, what was life like? And I suppose what your experience was of transitioning into motherhood.
Yeah, I suppose I've been quite just a career woman all my life.
Yeah.
You know, probably since leaving sixth form, I've just not stopped hustling. And I didn't have any sort of route, or there's no real method of getting into any sort of entertainment industry, is there? You know, whether you're an actress or whatever. Yes, okay, there might be drama schools or whatever, but in general, all of us have a different story. So I just hustled and hustled. I had to get out of a tiny little village in the Midlands, get myself to London. That was like first focus. Once I got to London, it was like, how do I get into entertainment? And I took about a million different jobs to get me there. I was a weather girl for years.
Wow.
I've had the strangest life. I did sports and then I did gaming shows and I gradually got myself to radio. And then radio helped me get into telly. And so that's, I put everything on the back burner. I didn't go to weddings and birthdays and I cut holidays short. I was a yes girl. I dropped everything for work. And so being a yes girl and being used to being, to swapping and changing my plans all the time and being spontaneous to then being a mum with a responsibility and someone that needs routine and some, my whole life has had to adapt because I've got to now have more of a plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like what a career it's been. Like I'm in so much awe of you because I think you were presenting Lorraine solo the other morning. I'm like, this is amazing to see a young woman in the early stages of motherhood doing this. Like I think it's absolutely amazing. So let's get into it. What is your mumfession?
I mean, Laura, I have so many. I could try to pick which one to go for.
Tell me all of them. Tell me all of them.
I'm going to tell one that I haven't told because I think this is a good one. Because I've not told anyone this story. I've not said it on the radio or anything.
Okay.
Because I genuinely feel bad about it. I had my first holiday where we took Ruby and we didn't dare go abroad. So we did like a staycation and we just went down to Margate. Went for a British seaside holiday, Airbnb. Jobs are good and lovely stuff. Ruby was still very little at this point, maybe like 3 months old.
Okay.
Okay. And, or maybe she was a bit younger. But anyway, I was still learning and making mistakes at this stage as well. There's things now I wouldn't do because I've gone, oh yes, that happens. And this is one of them, right? So it was like we'd packed, like we're emigrating to Australia. The car was packed with, you know, all the contraptions, because this is before they can hold themselves up.
Like it is easier to move to a different continent than bring your child, your baby at that stage away for a night.
Yeah, because I had one of those bottle making machines. I had to bring that for the milk powder. I had the bath seat. I had the bouncing seat. I had the high chair, all these different things packed. And it was bath time. And so I just stripped Ruby down, you know, nappies off and everything. And I scooped her up, but I scooped her up quite quickly into the sitting position, which immediately caused an ejection of poop, right? And it sprayed. But what happened was we were in this lovely Airbnb that was wooden floors with gaps in between. And the poo went down the cracks and was forever gone down into the floor, right? So obviously I cleaned the floorboards, but I can't get into the crack. And all I could think of is when this is peak summer, this place is going to stink. And I can't say anything about it. I can't do anything about this. And I can't pull up the floorboards. So that is my mumfession, that I basically, there is a phantom poo in an Airbnb and it's my baby's.
Maybe they're knowing now. Possibly.
I maybe said too much. Maybe I should change the location. Yes.
Well, I think I always talk about what can you do that's within your control. And it sounds like you did what was within your control. And I love this because I think, again, as mums, we're told, oh, go on these gorgeous holidays. Like, you see these pictures and videos on Instagram of these amazing holidays. But actually, I mean, nobody's showing that part. And what was your initial thought when that happened? Were you like, I need to hide this?
It was shock because it went all down my leg, all over the floor. Like you say, not glamorous. I'm holding it. I was like, Jake! And he came in, he went, what? Because he thought something really bad had happened. I was like, she's pooed everywhere. And that's when we both looked down and realised that the gaps were quite big in between the floor. And, you know, we realised that most of it had gone down the gap. And it was, as we were wiping it, obviously it was going down the gap more. And we both were like, we've got to take this to our graves. And here I am confessing. But I felt so bad. And yeah, I probably was thinking, can I get away with this without having to tell the Airbnb? Because can you imagine how much I'd be billed? Because I'd have to take up all the floorboards to get to it.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you'd go about cleaning it. I just feel sorry for anyone staying in it June, July this year.
Well, look, I will say it was a flawed strategy on their part for an Airbnb because anything could fall down there. Money. True. There could be money. There could be anything under there. So, you know, it's in a safe place. But on the topic of holidays, right, because I've said this before and I've got into a lot of trouble. I brought my now, he's almost nine. And when he was about 18 months old, I was like, oh, we're going to go on a family holiday to Spain because it's amazing. And everyone on Instagram is doing it and it looks fantastic. And my mum was like, I'm just warning you, it's pretty tricky. Like when they're this small, do you really want to do this? I was like, of course. So off we went, my husband, little baby Leo, off to Spain. And when I say it was the most stressful week, he cried, he stopped eating, he actually got a rash, we had to go to the doctor. And I came home and I literally was like, I'm never bringing my children on a plane again. I'm not able to. And that child is now eight. I since have not brought my children on a plane. Like, we will go on little staycations in Ireland, but I don't have the courage to do it because it was so hard. And for a long time, I thought, am I the only mother that finds this hard? Like, everyone is going on holidays. They're going to Disneyland and they're going to Spain and look at all their gorgeous photos. But actually, I can't be the only one because how could it not be hard bringing small people away? Like, how could it not be? So I wonder, has that experience put you off traveling with your baby or are you planning on doing it again? Would you be brave enough to bring her on a plane?
Well, first of all, I agree with everything you're saying. And I think the biggest lie you are ever told is the baby fits around your life. Don't change who you are. The baby will just be part of it. No, it won't. You are a slave to that child and you will be until it's 18 years old or older. Like, you can try and make the baby fit into your little lifestyle, but you will pay for it. Like, if you try and skip naps and if you try and do things against the routine, you of course can. You have to live your life. But anyone making out is easy. You know, like, you do see people with little babies and they've flown halfway across the world with them. Fair play to you if you have, but you aren't seeing every single day. And yes, they might have had one day where it was golden. They got that shot in the pool and it looks glorious. But I bet that night, I bet they didn't sleep because they were a poor day and they were jet lagged and they didn't get a nap time and then they didn't eat at the right time. And so I think there's a lot of fear around holidays. I have friends that have taken babies abroad quite young and some of them have had a good experience, some have had a bad. I just, even off the sheer packing situation, before Ruby could sit up on her own, I thought, how is anyone doing this? Because what are you packing? You can't even bath them. Do you know what I mean? Like, what are you putting them in?
It's so true. You don't have your little bath, like, you know,
the things, the contraptions that you need. Yeah. How are you getting all them on a plane? And the buggy at the start is quite big. You know, you eventually realize you can get a small one that's compact. I am going to brave an abroad holiday in June.
Wow.
She will then be a year.
Okay.
But there is a sweet spot, people say, isn't there, before they're sort of really walking and crawling and when they can do a little bit on themselves, sit up on their own and be awake a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I found the sweet spot, but I'm only going to Spain. I'm only going on a 2-hour flight.
Yeah. That is the difference when you see people going as far as Dubai. And I'm like,
Dubai all the time. How are these people doing it?
I can't even manage that flight. Like, I get cross. I get cranky. It's so hard. But I think this is a really good thing to talk about because I think particularly in this climate, so many mums are feeling pressure to give their kids this amazing holiday for a week or two. And it's sort of like, that's amazing if that's genuinely what you want to do. But if you're under financial strain or it's not really what you want, save that money. Like, spend it in the back garden with a bucket of water and they will be as happy. I just think there is so much pressure to do it.
I agree. And you're not going to have that holiday that you had before.
You're not
going to be sunbathing. In fact, in some ways, it's probably more inconvenient that it is hot and sunny because you'll never see it.
Sun cream.
You'll be in the shade.
Yes.
And the sun cream, and you don't want the baby to get burnt, and then they might be in the pool, but they can't be entertained in a pool for that long. Like, there's so many things that I think that can't have been as enjoyable as you're saying it was. And let's just normalize, like you say, a staycation or back garden or going somewhere like a farm or a park, because actually the baby only remembers the moment or however old the child is. You know, memories are just the thing you did. It wasn't necessarily where you were.
Exactly.
Us as adults put value on the Dubai or, you know, the Greece, which is lovely. But I can also see how it could just be your everyday routine, but 10 times worse because it's hotter, you haven't got all your stuff, you're stressed, and none of the normal things that you can go and nip out from the shops exist.
Yeah, and you're telling yourself, this should be amazing. I should be enjoying this because so-and-so on Instagram had an amazing photo, but yours is looking nothing like it. I'm so glad we're having this conversation because it's not spoken about enough. It's just not. Stay at home, people.
Yeah.
It's too hard.
And that is fine. Do not feel guilty if you don't go abroad for years or if you do all staycations. Some of my best family holidays were like Butlins and seasides and camping trips. They're the things I remember, like caravan holidays. Genuinely, they're my best memories. I didn't go abroad till I was, can't remember how old, but I was older.
Yeah.
And I don't think it matters. And I think a lot of it, yes, we might be seeing an influencer with their baby in this lovely matching outfit, you know, posing on the
beach. But what support do they have? We don't know. They might have someone with them. And that's amazing if they do. Amazing.
Yes.
But like for most of us mere mortals, we are doing it on our own.
Well, exactly. You don't know if they've got help and you don't know if that was the full picture. That might have been the 10-minute window. How many times do you get advertised something like keep your baby happy all flight, and it shows a baby playing with a fidget spinner? You go, that fidget spinner probably lasted a good 1 minute of entertainment. I'm sorry, that won't do a long haul flight. There is no way.
Yeah,
you're going to be up and down, out the sea. I think as long as we can all embrace it, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, there should be flights that are literally like young
parents,
kids, and we can all just share on the flight, like
pass
the baby around, pass them around, and then we can relax, because that's the part I would feel pressure over bringing my small kids now is what if they kick off, which I understand they might. It's a plane and they're bored. But there is kind of a lot on social media now of the judgment of parents and kids. And it's like, what do you want us to do? They're small people. They're bored.
I know. And I think, yes, you're going to get the odd parent that's quite rude and doesn't care. I'd say 9 times out of 10, the parents as mortified as you know, none of us want our children to be causing everyone else ag, because we've all been there as well when we didn't have kids and there's a baby crying. And I used to say to myself, if I ever got a bit annoyed at that, I used to think, one day, Sian, this could be you.
Yeah.
And I feel sorry for those parents. And I'm the adult here. I can put in noise cancelling headphones, or
I can have a glass of wine.
Yes. The baby can't, can it? So I think you just have to have a bitter leeway to parents. I think most of them are trying their best.
Yeah.
Like, they really are.
I find since I became a mom, when I see another mother now, whether she's trying to like get a buggy into the tube or navigate something, I feel like I've this instinct to go, do you need help? Are you okay? It's like this unwritten rule in motherhood that most women, I think, are there to support. And if their child is kicking off in the supermarket, it's kind of met with compassion and I've been there. I see you. It's okay. What can I do to help? And I just wish it felt a little bit more like that everywhere.
Yeah, true. Because, well, I've realized since joining this whole parent club, in a way, that being a parent isn't respected enough.
No.
Because I've been a career person. I've not looked at it, right? So I've just been focused on work. And it's only when you have a kid and you think, there's not enough respect on how hard this is and how important it is. We're all desperately trying to get it so right.
Yeah.
And how quick people are to judge or to say you're doing something wrong, or maybe it's just an internal feeling that you're not doing enough. I think we get mum guilt and dad guilt doing anything, whether you go back to work quickly or you don't go back to work. There's always these things, oh, am I doing enough? And I think we're all expected to crack on now. Both parents have to work. Most people need 2 incomes to survive.
Yeah.
And so every parent's working to the, like, you know, absolute burnout.
Yeah.
And is not-
and you come home then and do your second job. Because it is a second job. It's not coming home and let's just read a book for the evening. It's really hard. And that probably leads me to when you did become a mom 10 months ago. Is it 10 months ago?
Yes, yeah.
What was the thing that surprised you most? As you say, you weren't in this motherhood world. You know, you weren't aware of people like me and all the conversations. So what was the one thing that you were like, oh, I wish someone had told me that, like, that surprised you or felt harder?
I think there's been a few things along the way that you think, again, you always, probably because I wasn't part of listening to these sort of podcasts, I hadn't really thought about it. Maybe there are more people talking about these things. But for me, it was things like, I went from trying to breastfeed to bottle feed, and I didn't realize how different bottles could be. And just one thing I would love to pass on, because if you go through what I went through, it was really stressful. And I thought Ruby had colic, which is the thing that you all dread, because it's basically when a baby won't sleep because they're just going to be crying because they've got wind, almost like trapped wind, isn't it? But so I was convinced, I thought, oh, this is what's happened. She's got colic. And it was only when my sister, I was just telling my sister the story, she's got two kids, and she went, have you tried changing the bottles? Like, try a different teat. And I went, no, I just thought they were all the same. And she went, just try a different one. Second, I swapped. I didn't even have milk dribbling down her. Like, I can't explain the difference. I went from feeding her with a bottle that seemed to get the milk everywhere. The flow was too fast for a start.
Yeah.
But it was the smallest one this brand did. I didn't know any different. Switched to a brand that did a slightly smaller initial one. And suddenly I'm not even using muslin, which I had 10,000 of, because everyone, you know, you've got this picture that babies are going to be throwing up all the time and milk everywhere. And so that was fascinating for me, that sometimes a simple change, if I hadn't had a sister to call, I might not have known, and I might have carried on thinking I was doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And she might have had constant wind because she was getting the milk too quick.
And that's really key that you touched on that. Is that what your little inner dialogue was saying? Was it like, I'm doing it wrong, I'm not doing it right, as opposed to maybe I just don't have the right information?
Probably a bit of both. I'm quite a practical, logical thinker in general. I don't sort of overthink things too much. But I was getting frustrated that I was like, what? How? Because I want to help. I'm like, why? She doesn't seem happy and I can't work this out. And why is this milk going everywhere? And what am I not holding it right? And all these things, does she need more? And then you start questioning, have I fed her enough? And because at the beginning you doubt everything.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to work out this baby. And actually, you quickly become quite an expert in your baby, don't you? Which I realized. But it's those initial few weeks when you're sleep deprived and, you know, you're in tatters, aren't you? Whatever birth you had, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
And you're drained. And I said the other day, like, you're not fighting fit. Like, if you were told you're going to have to look after this precious thing from day one, you'd want to be physically in peak condition, right? You'd want to train for it, like a marathon. You wouldn't go into a marathon after doing 10 others and like feel and being beaten up and whatever and go into a marathon. So, but you go into looking after a baby, which is the most precious thing, when you're on your last legs.
Yep.
You're so tired. You're so broken. I had a C-section. I've got a scar. I can't move, you know.
And it's exactly that. It's like, and here is a tiny person to keep alive. Now, there's no manual.
Nope.
We are not going to tell you what to do. We are not going to even make it easy to access information. And by the way, you are going through, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, you are going through matrescence. So,
no, I haven't heard of that.
Oh.
What's that?
Right. Matrescence is like adolescence, right? So, you know, when we were going from childhood to adulthood, we were at our most vulnerable, things were hard, we were hormonal. Wasn't a great time for me, I will say. Matrescence is the same thing, but when you transition into motherhood, like light bulbs are going off in your head now. So you are at your most vulnerable from a psychological perspective. Everything is changing, your identity, your belief system. So you know when women say, I feel a bit lost.
Yeah.
Don't know who I am anymore. I find it hard to make decisions. All of that. It's because of matrescence.
Wow.
But yet nobody talks about that. It's not in the antenatal programs.
No.
It's not in postnatal care. So you're going through that. You're physically exhausted. You're given a small person to mind who doesn't sleep, so you don't sleep, with no manual. But yet as a society, we're told to enjoy every moment. This is amazing. And then when you're left feeling, oh, wait, this is kind of hard. I think a lot of women hold that in instead of saying, wait, this is really hard. Anyone else finding it hard? So I wonder, when you think back to your first few months, what was the hardest part of it?
The lack of sleep.
Yeah.
It's delirious. You know, I've never had such little sleep. And it's not the amount of time, it's the broken time. It's not getting that run. Any of us could sort of do a 4-hour stint and you'd be tired, but because it was in a stint. But when you're getting an hour and then maybe half an hour, then you're getting 2 hours and you just get into that deep sleep and then you're up again. And it's like torture.
It is torture. It's really, really hard. And do you think you fought that or did you accept it?
Probably fought it because I'm not used to stopping or feeling weak. I'm very much like, I can do everything.
Yeah.
And so I probably didn't rest enough. I'd had a C-section and I was up and out of the bed like the next day, which probably isn't advised. But my brain didn't think I was any different. Do you know what I mean? I didn't really, maybe I didn't soak it all in. I just sort of carried on thinking I could just do as normal.
Yeah.
And so I definitely was overwhelmed emotionally because I'm a very upbeat person. And I did feel very, just so emotional, like crying all the time. And, and like you've just said, hard to regulate emotion or decisions. I felt very overwhelmed all the time. Even by a text message would come through and I felt like I couldn't deal with having to reply to it.
You know the way I'm always saying that the whole motherhood industry isn't really designed to support mothers and that so many brands don't actually care about us? Well, I've just come across a brand that really does care about mothers. The brand is called My Expert Midwife. With My Expert Midwife, you're not just getting products to support you and your baby. You're also getting free expert midwife advice to guide you through pregnancy, postpartum and motherhood. You can literally call the midwife and it's free. How amazing is that? And when it comes to My Expert Midwife's range of products, they're crafted to be as natural and effective as possible, ready to tackle all the ups, downs and in-betweens. From baby wash to bum balm, stretch mark serum to a soothing spritz for your bits, everything is designed to protect and support both you and your baby through to the fourth trimester. There's no greater mark of trust than being midwife made and mum approved. I'll pop a link in the description below. It'll take you straight to a qualified midwife you can reach out to. Plus, you'll get a special discount code if you'd like to try any of My Expert Midwife's amazing maternity and baby range. So make sure to check out the link below and see for yourself why My Expert Midwife are one of the rare brands that genuinely cares about both mother and baby. I picked up on something there that you said, and maybe I've picked this up wrong. I said, like, did you surrender to that sleep or did you accept it? And I can't remember quite what you said, but it was something along the lines of, oh, you know, I got up, but that's just me. I did this, but that's just me. Would it be fair to say, and I could be totally wrong here, that part of you is feeling like, maybe if I just did this different, maybe a little bit of it was my fault, because maybe if I didn't get out of bed a day early, or if I didn't fight it as much. But is there any part of you that feels like me? It was me.
Yeah, definitely. I think you second guess every single thing you do at the beginning. Yeah. On loads of different occasions, I would have gone, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. Or maybe she didn't need that then. And maybe I didn't need to wind her here. And maybe if I hadn't picked her up then, I questioned everything, I think.
Yeah.
As much as I'm not someone that does that with work, or I don't tend to overthink things, I'm very good at going, that happened because of that, and then I need to do this. And I'm very like, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And I was struggling actually not being able to problem solve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes me so sad. And the reason I ask you that is a lot of women, you know, as you say, prior to motherhood, maybe in their career, they were like, I have control. I'm good. I've got this. You know, they have the kind of logic to go, well, that wasn't my fault. It wasn't anyone's fault. It was just a situation. But when we become mothers and when we're in that incredibly vulnerable time, the narrative shifts and it's no longer, oh, there's a practical solution, or recognizing the other factors that are making it hard. We put it inwards. It's hard, so it must be me. And why that's so sad is that builds up over time, and suddenly without knowing, your little inner critic is constantly saying, you're not doing it right. You're not doing enough. You should be doing more. You should be doing better. And when we think about maternal mental health, the reason that's so important is, you know, they've done a study recently in Australia, and this is probably going deep now, but they looked at like a study of women who had mothers who had suicidal thoughts. And they really went into, well, why is that? And the number one reason was because I didn't feel like I was doing enough.
Yeah.
Like I felt that they would be better off without me. And that's why I always catch that, because we might dismiss that as women going, oh, but we're just saying I wasn't doing it right. But actually, it's such a wider societal problem that as women, it's not our fault that we find it hard. There's so many factors that influence your experience in early motherhood, like the amount of support you have or don't have, your delivery and how that went, you know, what your baby is like, if they're colic or not, the relationship you have with your partner. There's so many factors. It's actually not down to us. But yet, as women, when it gets hard, what do we say? Maybe it's me.
Yeah.
And it's so, so sad. It's so sad. Sorry, I went completely off topic there. No, but
that's so true. And I hadn't really thought of it like that.
How does it make you feel to kind of hear me say that?
Well, yeah, that it is sad because I feel like I'm maybe lucky in terms of I am quite mentally strong, but not everyone is. And I think, and I have seen friends and even just mums in other groups and stuff, you do see that it, like this doubt and this obsession with us all trying to get it right all the time. And then even just in terms of social media, the critique, you're not allowed to get things wrong anymore. You're not allowed to be a new mum and try something because someone's going to shut you down for doing it wrong. That's wrong. They're wearing the wrong thing. I don't show Ruby's face on social, right? But one of the reasons I would also say is because the problem is every time you share something, so even if all I show is her hand, you can bet your bottom dollar there'll be one comment that will find something like, there's a blotch on that hand, she's too cold, that baby is freezing, you know? Yeah. And you think, whoa, this is with me only showing and sharing minimal stuff. And I am such a sharer. And Ruby has got the funniest laugh and she does the funniest stuff already. And the amount of times I think, I wish I could share this, what happened today, because it's so funny. And she's given me the like almost the most viral clip possible. And I think, it's a shame. It's a shame the world we live in where there's so much pressure on mums to get it right, coming from every single angle.
It's everywhere. And I think it's sad because it's kind of in contradiction to what we said at the start there. You know, when you see that other mother in the supermarket and their child is having a meltdown, my initial response is, are you okay? But yet that can equally go the other way where it's judgment and it's like you're doing it wrong. And I'm so sad to say that sometimes that's coming from other mothers. And I think the reason why is because I think as women, we just want the best for our children and we're all doing our best. And I think sometimes if we see another mother doing it another way, it can trigger something in, well, maybe she is doing it a different way. Maybe there are other ways. And it's just, and it's interesting because we just recorded an episode before this and it was the same theme, that pressure to get it right when actually, I mean, define getting it right. Like none of us know what we're doing. I'm 8 years in. I still don't know. And I don't think I ever will.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe before you have that comment. And do you know what it is? I do think people have good intentions.
Yeah.
Because I actually think a lot of it, like you're sort of saying, maybe comes from a place of going, oh, say if you've got three kids, like by now, you might watch something I've done and go, I made that mistake. I need to tell her that if she just does this, this and this, and you're so desperate to share the knowledge because we've all been through the trenches. So the second you feel like you've become a little bit of an expert in something, there is a compulsion to share it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that comes across as critical, especially if it's just written by a stranger in a comment, when probably the intention is, I just want to let her know because I just don't want her to make the mistake I did. And I think this is some of the problem is that like maybe it does come from having to try your best to be perfect and to get it right because we're all so scared of getting it wrong.
Yeah. And I wonder if we really like thought about that, what does getting it wrong actually mean? Because if that's what so many mothers are fearing, then like what actually is that? You know, I don't think there is a way to get it wrong, whatever that is. I mean, you know, I talk about this a lot when I imagine my kids and kind of measuring my success as a mother, whatever success is they're going to be in their 20s and they still want to hang out with me. Like, it's as simple as that.
I agree. Yes.
Do they want to be in my company, that they still like me? Are they well-rounded adults? Are they kind people? Are they resilient? Are they living a somewhat normal life, whatever that is? I mean, that's success to me. It's not going on the fabulous five-star holidays. It's not doing everything right. It's sort of the messy in between, isn't it, that builds these gorgeous humans.
Yeah, and I think maybe there wasn't that much overthinking about it when we were growing up. I had the most sort of like oh, she'll be fine, you know, stick her in the back of a trailer and she can hold on and she'll get, you know, it was way more chilled when I was growing up. And I feel like...
You're okay.
Yeah, I don't know, okay. I'm not, so, you know, living a life and paying my bills. And yes, maybe we can all overthink it. And you said at the beginning, like, you know, things that took you by surprise. It's even just weird new things that you are pressured with. I remember tummy time being this... absolute. It felt like some sort of regime. I was being told left, right and centre, tummy time, put the baby on the tummy. You've got to get them on the... And I think, oh my God, the baby will learn how to sit up. And you don't meet an adult that's still stuck on their tummy, do you? As in, yeah. I know I'm talking it's quite so, broadly here, no, but you know what I'm saying?
It almost became a cult, tummy time.
Thank you. It became like a cult.
Every single checkup, it was like tummy time. I'm like, I'm sorry. My first had severe silent reflux. He spent 24/7 crying. He was really unwell.
Yeah.
And I was like, tummy time is not on our radar right
it's
now.
The last
I'm trying
thing
to get milk into him.
Yeah.
Like, help me with that. And it's just, again, I think it's important to say, because there can be so much pressure on those like checkups. But actually, and again, I get in trouble for this. I think it needs to fundamentally shift. I think we need to focus on care of the mother, make sure she's okay, educate her on matrescence, make sure she has support there, and know that by doing that, she will be able to take care of her child.
Yes.
Because the way the model is now, it's care of the baby, which of course we need, but it's not recognizing that as women, we don't have the capacity to do it. As you say, I've just had a C-section. I haven't slept in 4 months. I have no idea what I'm doing. And you want me to implement that. I can't even count to 10 right now. And I fundamentally believe if we shift it completely, it'll be okay.
I agree, because if you're in the right headspace, a lot of the decisions will come better. You won't be so sleep deprived and you're not going to be as stressed. And then if there's not as much pressures, you know, if you need to come out of the group mum chat, come out of it for a bit. If
actually,
everyone's comparing,
I would recommend get out of there.
Yeah.
Full stop. I mean, that's probably, they can be some of the toughest places and some of the most supportive places.
Well, because you're all comparing because you all did it at the same time. And actually every kid will just, I'm convinced they'll find their own timings for everything.
Yeah.
So luckily I don't get too bogged down by it, but I do see people that do. And I think, don't worry about that. Your baby will sit up when they're ready. And, you know, and
there's so much pressure. There's
so much pressure. It makes me so sad, so, because some people I know take it to heart so much that it probably really eats them up.
Yeah. And like, I remember for my first, I was struggling to breastfeed and it wasn't happening. And I remember like all of...
Yeah, same for me. I couldn't...
Oh, couldn't do it. I read all the books. I did all the classes. It wasn't happening. I was bawling my eyes out. And all of the midwives, they treated me terribly. It was like, you didn't work hard enough for this. I'm like, oh my God. But anyway, a kind of a senior midwife came in and she was like, just give him a bottle. And I honestly thought an alarm was going to go off that, you know, what? Formula? I was told I can't give him formula. And she was like, he's going to be eating steak in a few months. Like, here's the bottle. And it was the best thing I ever did as a mother.
Same.
Because those first few days were robbed for me, crying about something.
How long did you do?
Oh, I attempted for 2 days. Couldn't happen. The child was starving.
So honestly, I've not spoken to anyone that's gone through this. I lasted 4 days, I think it was. And I also made the executive decision. I was like, this is nonsense. I'm not happy. Baby's not happy. We're both stressed. And all I wanted to do was to feed her.
Yeah.
I didn't really care how. I just wanted to feed her so she was full. And the second I changed what I was doing, it changed my entire experience.
Yeah. And like, and when you made that decision, was there a midwife that kind of helped you with the bottle? Like, how did you get to, I'm crying here, or maybe you weren't, I want to give them a bottle. Like, did you even have a bottle? Because I know for me, I had to request it. And it was this sort of big, what, are you sure you want to give them formula? Like, until that midwife came in and was like, she came in with this formula, like pre-made bottle, and it was like she'd smuggled drugs in. She's like, here, I have one here. Like, and I, like, looking back now, it was crazy. Like, it was almost like the bottle was smuggled in and she was like, quick. And I'm like, this is baby
sad.
Formula.
There is definitely still a taboo on formula, like really. And I, the reason, it's not that I'm pro or against either. I think whatever you can do, fantastic, feed your baby. But just make whatever works for you, because we're all so different. And like you said a minute ago, there's that feeling that someone's going to judge you for quitting or not couldn't handle how hard it was, so we just quit. I never quit anything. Mm. I wouldn't be in this job I'm in if I was a quitter, if I just gave up when something got a bit tough. So I knew in my heart, I thought, I'm not a quitter. I've got to trust my gut feeling right now, which is, this is a faff. This isn't working. And once I got in these conversations about, you know, and I did pump, I tried all of that stuff, and I started going, this is a farce. I was pumping, like I had like udders with these things going, I was pumping. That was going in the fridge. But then because I wasn't able to get her to latch, I was getting it back out the fridge, having to heat my milk back up and give it her. Then I would screw the lid on wrong or whatever.
There are too many steps to this process.
So many. And then there were so many hoops to jump through. And it was like, well, maybe if she can't latch, you can use nipple covers. And by the time I thought at this rate, she's having a metal nipple, a plastic bottle, a machine pumping. There's nothing natural about what I am doing here. I think I'll just go to formula. And it did change my life because, and there are pros and cons to everything that you do, but I will speak about a pro of formula because I've lived it, is you get into a routine quicker because you know how much they've had because you can physically see it on the bottle. And I had an alarm that went off every 2 hours and I knew how many milliliters to give her. And it helped form this routine where it would be the sleeping was happening and everything started clicking into place. I'm not saying that can't happen with breastfeeding. It can.
Yeah.
But
it's what worked for you. And I think that's the key. Yeah. There's no right or wrong way to feed your baby. It's what works for you. And I think your point earlier on in the episode of when you did switch to formula, then you were like, there's different bottles. What do you mean? I just think there needs to be so much more support around breastfeeding, formula feeding.
Yeah.
And back to my point, support the mother and she'll figure it out.
There shouldn't be any pressure that if for whatever reason it's not working for her, the breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Or some, I've got friends who just decided from the very beginning they weren't going to breastfeed. It doesn't have to be that you go through a rigmarole. Yeah. Do what you know will work in your setup. It could be that you know you've got to go back to work before your other half, or that you know your other half would be better helping you do the feeds in the night.
Yeah.
Whatever your setup is, some people have more help than others, some people don't. You've just got to make it work because if you're in a good headspace, like you've said, your baby will be and you'll be better. You'll be enjoying it more.
Yeah. So if you were to go back and tell yourself 10 months ago, right before you had your gorgeous little girl, if you had to give yourself one piece of advice, knowing everything you know now and everything we've spoke about the last half hour, what would it be?
It's a great question. One piece of advice. I genuinely think it would be to try and get rid of the noise. Don't over read up on everything and just trust a bit of your gut instinct. As much as we're not saying it's going to be easy and not, it doesn't have to be all rainbows and butterflies, what I'm saying is I think deep down you get a feeling of what you need to do with your baby. Don't second guess yourself and doubt it. And that boils down to anything, whether it's, oh, do I take them to A&E or not? And if you're feeling like that, maybe just do, because we all feel like a burden at the beginning because, you know, we're probably doing things we wouldn't normally do. When would I ever just go off to A&E? I don't. But I have done with Ruby because I doubted something. And I think it was in my gut instinct. I said, I don't feel like I am comfortable leaving her to sleep overnight. I need to get this checked. Just trust your gut with things.
Yeah, I think that's really solid advice. For me, it is about, I say to mums, actually don't read any book. Like ditch the books, ditch all the advice and go into motherhood knowing that it's okay if you find it hard, that you are going through matrescence. I'm so sad that you're 10 months postpartum and this is the first time you heard about matrescence.
Never heard the word at all.
I have had women that when they've heard it, they are literally like, I had to sit down on a park bench because I felt so validated. I didn't understand there was a reason why this was happening. And like, here we are, you're 10 months postpartum. This needs to be the first thing women are told when they get pregnant. 100%.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that advice. I think that's really good advice. If there's anyone in the early stages or they're about to, you know best. We do know best.
Yeah, and don't worry about what anyone else is doing. Yes, by all means, go to someone that's maybe had kids for advice, because that's always better than, in some ways, being in that weird new mum group where you're all testing the water, because you're going to get some know-it-alls and you're going to get people that are, you know, think they know more than others. Whereas if I tend to go to a mate that's had a friend or my sister, or go to people that maybe you think, oh yeah, they went through this.
Yeah.
Because actually some of the best advice, or even on what to buy and what not to buy, the parents know, don't they?
Parents know best. They really do.
There's so many gadgets at the beginning that you don't need.
Or go to a seasoned mom. Like my friend is having her first baby soon and the hospital had kind of shared a list. And I was like, I'm going to call to you. We don't need any of this stuff. Like, you don't need that. Oh, that
baby hospital bag where it says like 17 vests and 21 muslins. You're like, I didn't need any of that.
Over 80% of you told me that scrolling on social media makes you feel like you're failing as a mother. We are the first generation of mothers who have access to social media. At our fingertips, we are being shown images of perfect motherhood and how a mother should feel every minute of the day. The thing is, social media can't meet you where you are at. It doesn't do justice to the grey areas of motherhood. That's why I created The Village. It's a space off the scroll, away from the noise, and it's built to meet you exactly where you are. I'm offering all Mumfessions listeners 30 days of free access to The Village. Click the link in the description below for immediate free access. I can't wait to support you there. Shall we get into an audience Mumfession?
Yes, come on.
I think I kind of hated maternity leave, but I pretended the whole time that I loved it. In the lead up to going back to work, I thought I'd be dreading it, but honestly, I was looking forward to it because if I had to watch one more bloody episode of Peppa Pig or Blippi, I would have lost my mind. Now that I'm back, I keep telling everyone that I hate being back and I really miss my daughter. But the truth is, I really love being back. I love the warm coffee and that I can go to the toilet whenever I want. I love that I get to talk to other adults. I love just feeling a bit more like me again. And I just wish it was okay to say that out loud. It feels like, as a mother, you're expected to hate being away from your child for any reason. You're supposed to say you'd rather be at home. And maybe some mums do feel that way, but I didn't. I love my daughter, but I love that I can have a career too.
You know what's so sad about this? Again, it's kind of what we spoke about earlier. It's the rule book. It's that expectation of, as a mother, you shouldn't want to go back to your career. Like, as a mother, you should hate going back to work. And yes, that's true for some women, and that's absolutely fine. But I can relate to this mother so much in wanting that back and that career, as you spoke about earlier, that we've worked so hard for. Why should we have to give it up? What do you think about what she said?
I think it's interesting to hear it because I don't know how long she had off on maternity leave. Mm. But for example, I took 3 months off, and maybe this is how she feels after doing, say, let's say she did the 9 months or whatever. 3 months to me felt like a long time. I hadn't not worked since I was like 14 pot washing. You know, if you think about that lifespan.
I started when I was 14 in a supermarket, like, yeah.
Exactly. So if you've done that sort of career life, which a lot of women do, of course they do. It's 2025. Like, most of us are in careers of some sort, right? You've never known that much time off. I can imagine if she did the full maternity leave, she probably was getting twitchy and ready to have adult conversation. Do you know what I think this boils down to? And I don't think this is precise to career women and stay at home mums.
Yeah.
I actually just think we need to look at maternity paternity leave, right? Because I did shared parental leave, which is something that I think is fairly new, or it's coming into places where my other half did the rest of my maternity leave.
Love that.
And I think there should be a bit more normalizing that, where, because also to stick up for the dads, who said they wanted just 2 weeks and then back to work? So in the same way that we're expected to love staying at home, the dads are expected to go straight back to work. And some dads would have been much better adapted to being at home. And maybe you were more of the career person and you could go back. I think it should be split up. It could almost be done at 3 months at a time. You do the first three, they do the second three, you go back for the last three or whatever.
Yeah.
But in some countries, there's way more respect. And this is what I'm saying about, I don't think there's a lot of respect put on parenting. It's so hard as a couple. It's a two-man job, a two-woman job, whatever, you know what I'm
saying? Sometimes a four-man job.
Exactly. And so being expected to be at home living that repetition, because it is repetitive parenting and it is routine, and if you're stuck in that loop, I can only imagine after a while you are going to get a bit stir crazy, and I don't think you should feel guilty for that.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think the problem is, again, we're told as women, this is your role, right? And I remember after my second baby, when I had my first baby, I really struggled with my mental health. That's a whole other side story. But I ended up being out of work for 3 years.
Wow.
My whole marketing career, like, fell apart because, like, I was really unwell. This is how this all started. And then I kind of, the door was slightly reopened. I went back to a junior marketing role. If anyone works in marketing, you know, if you've been out of it for 3 years, much
what,
like
you have to go almost straight, you have to go back a few steps.
Kind of, yeah. Like, you know, it's probably like your career in broadcasting. It's hard. But when I had Alex, I remember he was 6 weeks old and I was like, I would love to go back to work right now. Like I had a completely different postpartum experience. And my husband and I were like, yeah, like he was thinking, I would actually love to maybe step away for a little while. But there was no option because of, as you say, maternity leave laws. And in Sweden, they do it right. I think it's up to, don't quote me, I think it's a year and a half that is shared between the mum and the dad.
Isn't that beautiful?
Isn't that beautiful?
In a way, there should be this thing of like, until they're old enough to go to nursery or however you want to say that, you know, because actually Ruby's doing a few days of nursery now. I'm not saying that there's a limit on that. But what I mean is, it's a shame that it's not, some countries, I think you almost get that first 3 years and then they go off to school, they go off to primary school or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And imagine if you could just split that so that so you got that experience. And maybe it wasn't that you did full-time, maybe they do start a little nursery or whatever in between. But just this thought, it's very sexist and old-fashioned on both sides.
Yeah.
Men might want to be at home doing it, I'm sure they do, or you might want to be doing it together as a couple.
Yeah.
Why should anyone have to be stuck doing it on their own?
And this is what I mean by the factors outside of our control that impact our experience of motherhood. Like, that is something in Ireland and the UK that isn't really an option for us. It's not there. We have no choice. But yet, if we're a woman and we're finding that hard, again, remember what I was saying, that inner dialogue, well, it's my fault. I should be enjoying this because that's the way it's meant to be. No, it's really, really not. The maths don't add up. So in Ireland, and maybe it's similar here, most women get 6 months paid leave.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can take up to 4 months unpaid. And then if you're lucky, you have holidays to add to that. That might bring you to the 11-month mark. But most nurseries and creches in Ireland won't take babies until they're 12 months. Make that make sense. It doesn't add up. So as a society, there's no support there. But yet it's like, but you must go back to work. But yes, but who minds the baby? Like, who holds them? It doesn't make sense.
No, and then I've seen it in comment sections. There is a whole section of the nursery hate, you know, where people are guilt tripped for doing that. And you go, you can't win because we're not living in the 1950s anymore where there can be the man goes off to work and he earns enough money to have the house, the drive, two cars, the dog. You know, it's a very different world where actually there's equal pressure on men and women to go back to work and to work, to earn a double income, to pay for the mortgage and everything else is expensive. So we're not in the right setup anymore.
No.
The world isn't set up for a woman to go back to work particularly. It's not really right, but yet we have to. So we're all stuck in this weird paradigm where we actually have to go back to work. But when we do, we're going to feel really guilty about it. If we don't, we're going to take a financial hit, which, fair, some people will do. And if you can do it, you might try and do it, but then life is harder. So whatever sacrifice you make, there's a downside. You cannot win because whether it's you're sacrificing money or you're having to downsize your house or whatever you're having to do to make it work, you'll never be seen as the perfect parent.
Yeah. Like, as mothers, we are set up to fail. And I think when we can recognize that, we can shut off that inner critic because we're not failing. None of us are failing. We are all doing the best we can given our unique circumstances. And that best will look different. My best is going to look different to your best. And my wish for any mother listening to this, and it was my wish from when I had such a horrendous experience when I became a mom, was I wish I didn't blame myself. I wish as women, we could stop saying it's my fault and we could start saying, actually, I'm just not supported. We could stop telling women, oh, you find the balance. You know, self-care needs to be banned. I say it all the time. There is no bubble bath that will fix this. I wish we could just completely shift it, that every single mother would walk out of the hospital and go, I'm amazing. I've no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it the way I want to do it and block out all of that noise and never, ever blame herself, because it just makes me genuinely so sad because we are being failed.
Yeah, well, I agree because, like, I just don't think there's a system set up for modern day living right now where you're trying to raise children and all of us, like, I want to be hands-on and do as much as I can. I wish I could do it all. I really do.
But what is doing it all?
I don't know.
Like,
don't
again,
really know.
We're fed that doing it all. I get in trouble. There's no such thing as doing it all. Nobody is doing it all. And I think as women, we're the first generation of little girls that were told you can have it all, but actually it's a lie. Mm. We can have it all, just not at the same time, or we can maybe have a lot of it with support. And I think our generation of mothers are striving to do it all and we're absolutely burning ourselves out in the process. And it's so sad. But final question. If I gave you a magic wand now and you could change anything about motherhood to make things feel easier for mums, what would it be?
Well, maybe it just sums up everything we've spoken about. Maybe I would just change the perception that we all see it as like a support rather than attack. Like, I think if the narrative could change, and it won't just be individuals, it's the media, it's everything. If the narrative could change, like, wow, aren't we all doing so well or trying so hard to do our best? You know, I would say most people are moving heaven and earth to try and make their kids have the best life experience they can with what they've got. And whatever we're all trying to do, we've all got the same goal. We just want happy, healthy children that are enjoying life and turn out to be well-rounded people. And so you're trying to show a bit of everything. You're showing what hard work's about. You're showing what love's about, how to be kind and all those kind of things. And if we could all just maybe respect that a little bit more, and that's in terms of parenting in general, if there could just be a bit more respect around, it's a really tough job, but everyone's trying their hardest. And I hope that in the future, there could be a bit more support externally in terms of jobs, in terms of the government or grants or whatever needs to happen to make actually raising children a bit more important than work.
I absolutely love that because I think, as you say, my wish for my daughter, if she ever becomes a mum, is she never feels the pressure I felt. She never feels the judgment. What she feels is supported in hopefully navigating motherhood in a slightly different system, you know, as you say, more supported, but that women rally and not judge, even if that judgment is unintentional. And sometimes it is, because as you say, as mothers, we just want to kind of share that advice or this worked for me, but like that is my hope. That's why I have Momfessions, that we can start talking about it in a different way, shift that narrative and hopefully eventually change that support so that, you know, women like you and I could have had a different experience, but that the women before us definitely will. I think that's lovely. Oh my goodness, thank you so much for joining us. That was a really, really lovely conversation.
I really enjoyed it. It's really nice to be able to talk about stuff like this.
Oh, I'm so glad. And I think you have shared some really great advice and your honesty. I've no doubt if there's a new mom listening is going to be like, okay, I don't know what bottle to use. That's okay. Because they didn't tell me.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to know.
It's okay with all of that stuff. Just you'll work it out. Don't get bogged down by any of it. Enjoy it if you can. Like, you know, life is hard enough. Don't put any extra pressure on yourself to be this wonder mum, because you said it, that person doesn't exist. No one is nailing it completely.
That was such a refreshing conversation with the lovely Shan. And the reason I enjoyed it so much is I don't normally have guests on that are so new to motherhood. And it was really, really refreshing to hear her experience and what, you know, she found hard and what she wished she knew. And the reason it was so powerful is it really spoke to what I always talk about in terms of, you know, that picture of motherhood, the rules of motherhood, that what we're told a good mother should be, and really the fact that I always say, and really to the point of our experience of motherhood, which is what I've always spoken about, is really not down to us, that it's influenced by so many external factors that are outside of our control, like our privilege, lack of privilege, our support or lack of support, whether we have a partner or not, whether our employer is giving us enough maternity leave or not. And all of those factors, will impact the experience you have in early motherhood and beyond. But yet, as women, it's so sad that when we find it hard or we don't quite know what to do, we turn that inwards and say, well, it must be my fault. So I just loved that conversation because it brought all of that to the surface and really recognize it's not your fault. It's actually nothing to do with you. You are navigating a system of motherhood with the best you can do. And my best will look different to your best. And that's all any mom can do. And I really, really, really loved her taking it. So for this week's challenge, if you want to get involved, I want you to just catch your shoulds. And we've done this before, but it's helpful to do it again. Every single time you hear yourself say, I should or I shouldn't this week, I want you to just catch it. And the reason why is because the shoulds are generally not things you need and want. They are external pressures. They are the shoulds of motherhood. And they are the things that are driving your guilt. They are driving your overwhelm. They are driving that little inner critic to tell you you are not doing it right. All I want you to do this week is to just catch your shoulds. I don't want you to question yourself. I don't want you to find a solution. I just want you to become more aware of how often you are saying the words, I should or I shouldn't. Because over time, what will eventually happen is you will react to it like I do. I no longer have the word should or shouldn't in my vocabulary. In fact, when I say it now, I become hyper aware and I catch myself because I know it's not something I need or want. It's an external pressure. And because of that, I genuinely experience zero mom guilt. Never, ever, ever. I experience zero mom guilt. I don't experience it and I haven't in years. So this week, catch your shoulds, count them, become more aware. And for the love of God, please remind yourself that it's not your fault. You're doing your best and you are an amazing mother. As we finish up today, I want to share a voice note from a mum who is now in her happier chapter of motherhood to give you hope that you are closer than you think.
I am very excited for the new season of Mom Fessions coming out. I do have a Mom Fession for you. So I have been a village member for over a year now with yourself and all the other amazing ladies that are in it. And honestly, when I had my second child, if I did not have that Mom Fessions and the village, I probably would have lost my mind. It was just great going in to a very safe and honest open space like between the man, so we literally felt that we were just all on the same page, because sometimes social media is just fake. So being in the village for over a year, the stuff that I've learned, like managing like your house, like literally one room at a time in the house is clean and the rest I don't mind. I literally do one job a day, and if I get any other jobs done, it's a bonus. I don't try and do it all now, and that's with the help from all the tools and the modules in your village. I do get a bit of time. I might get a half an hour to myself now a day where I can just have a coffee. I have no guilt with offering screen times or anything like that anymore, where the first couple of months when I first had my second baby, like I'd be up the walls if I wasn't giving my eldest all my attention at the same time, if that makes sense. So yeah, that mom guilt is gone. Obviously there's days that it's there when your reserves are low, but I notice my reserves going low now before being in the village. So now I notice, like I'd notice like a day or two beforehand now, I'm like, right, I'm gonna explode one of these days now. I can feel it building up for myself. So then I just take time out for myself. I let my husband know. He knows when to come in. I just get a little bit more time for myself. So just being in the village for over a year with the moms, with yourself, getting that one-to-one coaching, it honestly has been the best investment ever. But yeah, that's my mom fishing and I'm very excited to have you back.
Thank you for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the subscribe or follow button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and a rating wherever you're listening. I'd really, really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching, or join the village via the link in the description below. I hope you have a wonderful week, and remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy, it's essential. Thank you to my expert midwife for supporting this episode of Momfessions. Don't forget to check out the link in the description below, which will bring you straight to their free Call the Midwife service, along with a special discount code for their amazing range of baby and mother products. Mom Mumfessions is an Insanity Studios production. The head of production is Charlotte Mason. The head of digital is Ed Buckley. And the production assistant is Abby Sandler.